Aloha, and welcome to Season 2 of the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. In each episode, we take you behind the scenes with Hawaii's most influential business, community, and cultural leaders. Our guests share their unique career paths and reveal their plans for the future, and you'll hear career, business, and leadership advice that's ideally suited to Hawaii. Let's get started. It's Season 2 of the Hawaii Business Podcast. Here's your host, Anyang Nakata.
Today's episode is presented by Subaru Hawaii. Discover the all-new Subaru Solterra, the first-ever electrified vehicle from Subaru. Love is more electric. Visit SubaruHawaii.com to learn more. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Hawaii Business Podcast. I am really excited today to have with me Chasen Ishii, President of Atlas Insurance, which is part of the Island Holdings Group. Welcome, Chasen.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
I actually really love that you did not wear an aloha shirt. It's a very nice shirt, but not an aloha shirt. Makes you stand out.
Thank you.
So when we were talking story, it was such a, I so enjoyed it. And then when I was walking away, I had this sense that no disparagement to anyone else that I've already talked story with, because it's all been really fun and lovely. But when I left our talk story, I got the sense that you're the kind of results-oriented, no need take credit, let the work speak for itself, local-style leader that I've always been excited to tell stories about, because you just don't show off. You just deliver, and you deliver through your people and for the organization that you're leading. And I just left feeling so great about talking story with you today.
Wow, such great kind words. Thank you very much. You know, I'm glad you felt that way, because truly that is my leadership style. I do believe that over time it has shifted and has really evolved to the point I am today.
Yeah, and you're still evolving.
Yes,
and none of us are perfect.
Absolutely.
I make a ton of mistakes all the time.
Absolutely.
I bought the wrong sandwich at 7-Eleven this morning. Okay, so I went on the Atlas website, and there were 6 core values. So everybody forgive me. I'm going to do my best to say the Hawaiian words with a lot of respect. So pono, we always act with integrity. Ho'okele, as a navigator or master of the ship. Lokahi, collaboration is our foundation. Kako, the power of network, enables us. Imi'ike, we are seekers of knowledge. And alakai, we are leaders who guide by example. And I felt that 3 of these in particular reminded me of you. And that's pono, we always act with integrity. Lokahi, collaboration is our foundation. And alakai, we are leaders who guide by example.
Wow, those are very, again, very kind words. You know, it's an interesting story background behind this core values that we have at Atlas Insurance. It's something that was actually put together by interns that we brought on to
the
organization.
No way.
Absolutely.
Talk about bottom up.
Bottom up. So what we basically had was their project, their for them as interns at Atlas, was to come up with, what do you think our core values are? And they actually interviewed our staff, some of our customers, our clients, and they came up with these core values.
That's incredible. So, again, wonderful marketing firms out there, wonderful branding firms, right?
Right.
So it wasn't from one of those. It was from an intern group.
Right, who said, this is who Atlas represents.
Yeah, so pretty objective.
Very objective.
Because they've got no skin in the game,
yes.
Right? Wow, that is so neat. So about when was that done?
This was done in about 2018.
That's really, really neat. So I wanted to ask you, where does this quiet confidence, gotta deliver, come from? I have a sense it's your family. And based on our talk story, it's not a traditional motivation story. So tell me about that, because you're a local boy. You're born and raised here. You went to Casa High School. My best friend graduated from Casa High School. So talk to me about small kid time days and your parents.
You know, yes, I'm a proud graduate of a public school here in Hawaii, Castle High School. And a lot of my, I think, foundational background or foundational core values come from my parents. My dad was very quiet and strong, and my mom was more the robust, outgoing individual. And I still recall a conversation we had. And this is when
this is with your mom.
This is with my mom.
Yeah.
When I graduated from high school at Castle, I was contemplating to going to college, and I was accepted to the University of Hawaii. And I remember going to her very excited and saying, "Hey, I'm going to go to the University right. of Hawaii. I got accepted." And she said to me with these words, "Why? Because I don't think you should waste your time. You're not going to make it anyway."
Oh my God. It's unbelievable.
And I looked at her. I said, "Wait a minute." I was stunned, right? I'm like, she goes, "No, we're not going to pay for you. We're not going to help you. I think you're just going to be wasting your time. I think you should just go out and work."
Oh my God. I cannot believe that.
And so it really gave me the motivation to work my way through college. I had three jobs. I moved out at age 18 and really went out on my own. And it was really sort of a quiet motivation that was given to me by my mom. At the end of the day, I still remember graduating from the University of Hawaii and going to her and said, "You know, Mom, you're the reason why I made it. It's because of your comments and your conversation." And I said, "I don't know if you remember this conversation, but this is what you said." And she looked at me stunned and said, "No, I never said that."
She didn't remember?
She never remembered. And I said, "Well, that's my story and I'm sticking to it." So I think quietly she challenged me to be a better person, to yeah. really succeed and go out on my own versus being entitled or feeling that something would be given.
Yeah. Of course, I don't know your mother, but it sounds like that lesson, whether it was on purpose and she didn't remember, it has really, really stuck with you. And it's kind of been your inner compass, if I may say.
It has.
Yeah.
It
has. Wow. Because, you know, definitely she lit a fire under you, but you totally could have gone the other way.
Right. I could have. But, you know, I guess it was my pride and sort of my competitive nature playing sports throughout growing up.
Oh, what sports did you play?
I played just about all. I mean, back then there was really no specialized. Yeah. So I played baseball, football, basketball.
I see you as a baseball player.
But mostly baseball.
Yeah. I see you. What position?
Catcher and first base.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Believe it or not, I played softball. Oh. I did second base and shortstop. I know it's hard to believe.
Excellent.
Okay, so we have, I believe we have lots of people strategy and other business philosophies in common, having spent some time with you now. But we also share that we're both alumni of the Scheidler College of Business. Now, both when you and I graduated, it was not yet called that, right?
Correct.
Business,
that's correct.
BizAd, Business Administration. But now we can say Scheidler College of Business. And you attained your business degree. You put yourself through it. You worked, you know, multiple jobs. You paid for everything. You went to school full time. Let's not forget that, right? You didn't go part time. You went full time.
I went full time.
And you probably ate a lot of ramen.
A lot of spam, a lot of ramen.
Of spam in. I just said spam in. Okay. So you told me, I asked you, so after graduation, you know, basic question, mm-hmm. where you went, and I was just blown away because it's such a classic example of the interconnectedness and the magic, I believe, of this community. So tell me about Business Night, George Fukunaga, and Surfco.
You know, thank you for bringing that up because it really holds dear to me. I was part of the Business Night. I was
which is a mentoring event.
Which is a mentoring event at the Scheidler Business School. And my mentor was Mr. George Fukunaga.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that evening and him giving me his business card and saying, "If you're ever looking for a position or a job, please give me a call."
What an offer.
What an offer.
Yeah.
At that time, I already had secured employment. So I said, "Thank you very much, Mr. Fukunaga. I truly appreciate it." But I went on to a different career. 6 months later, I gave Mr. Fukunaga, George Fukunaga, a call and said, "I don't know if you remember me, but you gave me your business card during our business night at the University of Hawaii College of Business. And I'm looking for a position. And I'm just trying to investigate, what does Surfco have to offer?"
Mm-hmm.
And to my surprise, he remembered me. And he said, "Sure, why don't you come on? Let's set up an appointment." And so it started from there. I went to his office and sat down. And I was blown away because the first things that he said out of his mouth was, "I have six positions for you."
Oh, my goodness.
Which one would you want?
It wasn't just a talk story. Prove it to me. He came prepared.
He came totally prepared. So he must have spoke to HR. Must have gotten all the positions.
He did the work.
He did all the work. And he came to me and says, I got six positions. Which one would you want?
Wow.
And so he went over each one briefly. And I sat back.
Yeah, so which one did you choose?
You know, good question. It was something that I could not really decipher, right?
Okay.
Because not really having the background or that pertinent information, I sat back and I said, Mr. Fukunaga, if you were in my position, which one would you select?
Oh, okay, smart, good move, but also sincere.
Very sincere. And to my surprise, he said, selling copiers.
Wait. Of the six choices, selling copiers was one of them?
Yes, and it was probably my last choice. I mean, you had more glamorous offers such as management trainee, part of the marketing department, all these different other positions. Right. And I'm like, okay, selling copiers. So I said...
So, but you asked him, so now you have to listen.
I had to listen, right? So I said, okay, Mr. Fukunaga, why did you select, of all the positions, what makes you think this is the one I should choose?
Okay.
And he said, because if you can sell copiers, you can
do anything. Oh, so smart.
And
yes.
So I sat back and I said, okay, well, I guess selling copiers it is. And so lo and behold, I got to say, I joined Servco selling copiers and had a great career there and some defining moments. One defining moment was about a year and a half into the position. Here I was, the ripe old age of 26, almost 27. Mr. Fukunaga came up to me and said, we're going to promote you. But we're not only going to promote you, but you're going to have to now be in charge of your former division manager who is in his 50s. And he's going to report to you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I have been in a situation like that, but not at that tender age, maybe like 40. And that is tough. That's tough.
It was extremely tough. It really made me kind of pivot, having to learn and really grow up quite rapidly.
Yeah.
From a leadership perspective.
Right.
And George was an incredible mentor throughout the years. Going forward, he continuously looked at my career, added more and more responsibilities to educational stores, equipment leasing, retail outlets, consumer electronics. I mean, he just kept on adding more and more
responsibilities. Well, it's kind of like, so even though, because you asked him for his advice, or what would you choose? He chose copiers. And so you didn't choose the management training, but it's almost like he put you through the George Fukunaga management training program.
Absolutely. And you know, what's just incredible was, and I'm so invaluable, right? So I still remember his Saturday talks with me. And he would come in.
Saturday?
Yes, on Saturdays he would stop.
What are you doing there Saturday?
Then we worked Saturday. Everyone worked every Saturday, right?
Oh, okay.
So he would come by the office, stop by maybe once a month, maybe once every other month, whenever he was in town. And he would close the door and he would have these discussions. And, you know, back then it was like my parents, right? If you did something well, nothing would be stated.
You might get a tiny like look or like pat on the shoulder, maybe like barely touch, like barely you can feel it,
right? But of course, if you didn't do something right, wow, you would definitely hear that.
Yes,
but
yes.
You learned, and I learned tremendous amount from that gentleman. And,
yes,
and I gotta say, even to this day,
well, I'm jealous just listening to it. I mean, I'm not jealous, envious. I mean, what an opportunity.
Incredible opportunity. And so even to this day, I feel he is my mentor. He taught me some invaluable lessons. Like, really, you know, some of the lessons that I learned from him was, number one, to have humility and sincerity. Hawaii is such a monogamous state that you have to learn that it's all about relationships and trust.
Mm-hmm. But I sense that he didn't just tell you, he modeled it, right?
He totally,
because you know those some people, they tell you, but they do something different.
Absolutely. And I'll share a quick example. And mm-hmm. that was, you know, back then, Servco had Gibson Shopping Center.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have these.
They were in tons of lines.
Tons.
It was wild.
It was crazy. So, you know, these Gibson employee nights, the lines would be like 20 deep. But Mr. Fukunaga, George Fukunaga, and his wife, Alice, would be with their own shopping cart full of things that they were going to buy and waiting in line like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one example.
Tiny but meaningful, right?
Very meaningful to show the kind of humility that gentleman had.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, I learned a lot and grew a lot in the organization. He even sent me away to Cambridge to go through the Harvard Graduate Business School.
Wow.
And they paid for it and they helped me through that process. And it was invaluable. I learned about strategic planning, about different life lessons and business lessons. And, you know, it came to the forefront where it really helped me as an individual grow.
You know, I was thinking two things, not the same story, but I also have somebody who was a mentor to me who passed on. And I still think of him as my mentor. And I still talk to him, especially in the car. And I still think, I know that he is looking down. The other thing that resonated with me was what we'll talk about going forward, I think our listeners will agree, the lessons and the imprint that George Fukunaga has made on you, it's really in your DNA.
It is
day to day, or every organization you've gone to and led, day to day, it is who you are. It is in you.
It is.
Yeah.
I feel it. And so, you know, I was with Surfco for 16 years.
Yeah.
Had a fantastic career.
Yes.
When I left, I was in the executive committee as a group vice president. And
from your copier days.
Started as a copier days. And would have been there probably for the remaining of my life. It wasn't for the sudden passing of George Fukunaga.
Right.
For me, it just, from a feeling perspective.
Right.
You know, I have great friends there and continue to have great friends there.
Yes.
But just from a feeling perspective, it changed.
Yes.
And so I thought it was time for me to seek my next chapter. And that next chapter led me to a whole new industry. And that was...
Well, of course, because I also learned that, and I mean this in the best way, because I also consider myself like this. You like pain. You like challenges. you don't like stay still. Actually, you're like a serial monogamist, though. You don't jump jobs, but you like the challenge. And then once you've overcome it and taken the organization to new heights, then you're like, okay, ready for the next pain, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so tell me about your next phase.
So my next phase was at Coldwell Banker Pacific Properties.
And that's when I met you, when I was at the Charlotte College of Business.
Yes. That's correct. That's when we met.
Yes.
And so I was part of a succession plan that in 5 years, I was going to be taking over for the two directors as their president. And it was a great run. We did extremely well. We were, you know, in charge of the largest real estate company in the state. And, you know, I learned a lot there.
So why do you think they approached you? Because you you did sell copiers, but you didn't have a real estate license. You've never sold a home.
Right.
So what was it? Because, and I'm asking you, one, because I'm interested, but because I think that our listeners can gain something there, because I am a proponent of this generalist mindset, right? I have deep respect for people who have deep expertise, subject matter expertise, and committed themselves to an industry. But I personally and professionally also believe that we need more critical thinking skills, analysis, you know, ability to learn, adapt, agility. And so to me, you're a kind of leader that has risen to the top of different industries. So why did they approach you?
Well, they saw the diversity that I was leading at that time. You know, it was just not copiers. It was in the educational field, educational retail stores, consumer electronics. And they saw that I put together things in the equipment leasing side, which is the finance side, call centers, all these different elements that they were looking to diversify. And they're saying, you know, we're a typical real estate company. And if we want to grow and we want to then expand into greater heights, we need someone to look at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they saw in me, because it was not traditional.
Mm-hmm.
You never really saw someone take over a real estate company that wasn't either part of the family or kind of grew up
as a star agent.
Agent, became a broker, right, and then a principal broker, and then part of the owners.
Right.
And so it was really an experiment. And I was that experiment,
mm-hmm,
at Coldwell Banker Pacific Properties.
So how did it go? Because you were there for quite some time and you took it to quite new heights. But you told me a little bit about some of the, and I say challenges to put it lightly, that you had. And I've been in those shoes too, where you're kind of getting hazed a little bit and they're not buying into it. You know, maybe the two owners bought into it, right? Brought you in, new vision, outsider, you know, strategic planning, you know, real business mindset, all that stuff. But the agents, it can be like herding cats.
Absolutely. Because, you know, in real estate, all the agents are independent agents.
Right.
Right. So here we had, you know, over 500 agents and they're all independent. And then the office that they threw me in was a top producing office for Coldwell Banker. And so I still remember my aha moment because I was sitting there too, coming from someone outside of real estate, going into the industry and saying, what value can I bring to the agents and to the company and to the clients? And I didn't know, right? I even remember having these discussions with the two managing directors and saying, so why did you select me? And they said, it's never been done. We don't know. We just see you something in you.
I totally and, get it. I've had that conversation. Like, dude, why?
Right. But I still remember this defining moment. And that was one of our top producers was, the corner office, the whole thing,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
Would be going around the office and saying, I don't know why they hired this guy. He doesn't even have his license. He's never sold real estate before, and I'll never work with him.
Wow. He or she said, I'll never work with him.
Absolutely said, I would never work with him.
Yeah. I've had that too. So tell me more.
And so I remember thinking, okay, I have to somehow convince her otherwise. And so I went to her and I said, okay, when you have 30 minutes, I just would like 30 minutes of your time. And after that 30 minutes, if you feel I add no value to your team and to your growth, then you never will have to talk to me again. But if you see that I do add value and how you can be even more successful with us as a team, then I would like you not only to work with me, but I want you to tell everyone else that they need to work with me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she said, okay.
Because she didn't think you could.
No.
Yeah.
No.
She's like, fine, I'll give you 30 minutes.
She did. Yeah. That's exactly what she said.
Oh, okay.
And so I sat in that room, in her office, sat down, and I said, okay, you probably as a successful agent feel like you're running your own company, mm-hmm. right? Like you're the president, CEO of your own firm. Mm-hmm. She goes, absolutely, I am.
And this is synonymous with a lot of salespeople in different industries.
Okay. Correct. And so I said, what I want to do today is to speak to you as a president CEO, not as a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go over your strategic plan. Let's talk about your demographics. Let's talk about your budgets. Let's talk about your SWOT.
And what did she say?
Your competitive analysis. And she looked at me with this blank stare, like, what are you talking about? Right? And so we sat down and I said, well, let's take it really, what is your plan? She said, my plan is to do 20 million next year. I go, no, that's a goal.
Right.
What is your plan?
Right. What's the strategy? What's the roadmap?
What's
right.
your roadmap?
Right.
And she said to me, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let me just take it one step at a time. Where is your source of business coming from? Who do you advertise to? How do you spend that budget? And as we broke it down, she was definitely spending almost all of her funds on trying to generate new businesses from the general public versus working with her current clients, which is her top referral base. So we worked it through. We went all through the scenarios. And at the end of the conversation, she says, oh, I see what you're saying.
Wow.
And that's when I said, look, today you might know a little bit more about real estate than I do. I'll catch you up. But I think I know a little bit more about how to run a successful company and a business than you do.
Yeah.
So can you see how, if we work together, how successful you may be even further in the future?
I love that. So many gems to pull out. Because obviously this is, you know, your life, but things for others to gain from. I've been in those shoes, so it very much resonates with me. But whether you become a new manager of a division, you know, whether you come in as a new senior manager or an executive, the truth of the matter is, even if you are a deep subject matter expert, there is going to be that initial period that actually it is your responsibility to gain the trust, your responsibility to show value. The title and the salary and how you came in, if you kind of hitch your wagon to that, it's going to go bad, right? You have to take a step back, be humble and say, okay, what's my strategy here? I have to win over these hearts, these minds, and show value. And it is not by coming in guns blazing, telling them what to do in their specialty, right? But how can I love and support you and provide value in the areas that you're not yet an expert in?
You put it extremely well. You know, what was even more challenging for me is I didn't have the title.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had to sign an NDA to say,
oh my goodness,
I was just
secret.
It was secret. Because
so they didn't know you were part of the succession plan.
No.
They're like, who this guy?
Yes. Who's this assistant branch manager that had a high position at Servco?
Yes.
Why is he taking a step down as assistant branch manager working in an office?
Yes.
With no real estate license?
Yes.
Right? So, and the reason for it is because all of the agents are at will, truly mm-hmm. at will and independent. The concern was that people would say, okay, what's going on? Are they leaving? Are they retiring? What's happening? And so, no one knew what the succession plan was all about.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I've literally been in those shoes as well. So when you come in the initially without the title and the transparency, oh man, fun times, huh?
It was really,
but
really fun.
I learned and grew tremendously. Right?
Same here.
Exactly. And I'm sure there are people who have been through similar situations as us, and they're very, very proud of themselves quietly. And they're grateful for the experience.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
And so we were able to work on a business plan. And literally what I did was I had my aha moment, and I did business plans for all of our agents in that office.
Well, you put 65 together.
65.
And then within the year, your office became the number two office in the country.
In the country.
In wow. The country
for all of Coldwell Banker.
Yes, yes. Like I said, the proof is in the pudding with you. And also, you know, you made some hard decisions about culture, which I also relate to as well. Because sometimes when there is one or two individuals, although they may be producing at a very high level, which is very difficult, right? Mm-hmm. So do you choose profits or do you choose culture? And I'm going to call a spade. A lot of companies choose profits, right? But you made the decision to lead by example and put your money where your mouth is. And you made some pivots in the culture. And you went, and because as a result of that, you actually grew your agent team from about 65 to 180 in 2 years, because it became a place where people knew that it was a meritocracy and it was about respect and results.
That's correct. So the second defining moment, first was business plans and strategy. Second defining moment was to make sure that we can instill the correct culture. And we had certain agents that were not treating staff in the right manner. And so we made a hard decision. I made a hard decision in letting go one of our top producers.
That's very difficult.
It was very difficult. I had to go to the directors and say, hey, look, I hope you could support me on this. And they, at the beginning, were kind of wavering. But I said, we need to do this to establish the correct culture. And we did. And to their credit, they supported me on it. And let me say, going forward, it was an incredible move, because what had happened was then all the other agents from different companies saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, something's different here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's something that we want to join.
Sales cannot forgive sins.
Correct.
Right? Right. Wow. And, you know, when I say it's difficult, I don't just mean profits. You know, you have to think about the clients. You have to think about the other team members. You know, anytime someone is let go, whether they were toxic or not, there is an HR fallout or a crisis that you need to manage, right? And the communication plan and all that stuff. So it's not just about profits, but it's not an easy decision to make.
It's not. It's not. And I say that it was probably one of the best moves we ever did as
yeah.
an organization. So we grew not at 280, but 220
mm-hmm.
at that point in the office. And we continuously grew. And so going forward, I did meet all of the necessary goals and objectives that the directors had for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so 5 years later, they said to me, we got good news and we got bad news.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, what's the good news? They said, the good news is you met all the goals, you exceeded them, and so we're going to promote you to president.
Oh, good. Okay.
And I said, okay, but what's the bad news? And said, the bad news is we sold the company to a private equity firm out of New Jersey. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I'm the new president.
Uh-huh.
I have to report to the private equity firm. And not only that, this is in 2008.
Right.
When the mortgage debacle was happening.
Right, right. Good
what
times.
What great timing.
Good times, good times. Well, let's take a short break and hear from presenting sponsor, Servco Pacific. I hope Mr. George Fukunaga is smiling down on us right now. And when we come back, let's talk more story about the next mountain that you climbed successfully, which is joining Island Holdings Group and assuming the leadership of Atlas Insurance. So we'll be right back after a message from Servco Pacific. Today's episode is presented by Subaru Hawaii. Dedicated to making the world a better place, their goal is to be more than a car company through its love promises. The Subaru Hawaii Love Promise is a vision to show aloha and respect to all people at every interaction. To spread the love promise as far as possible, they work with a diverse range of organizations that fall under the cause areas of the earth, learning, pets, and caring for and helping others. Subaru Hawaii believes in being a positive force in the communities where we live, work, and play, not just with donations, but with the actions that set an example for others to follow. To learn more, visit SubaruHawaii.com. Welcome back, everybody, from the break. Today, I have with me Chasen Ishii, president of Atlas Insurance, part of the Island Holdings Group. Welcome back. How was the break for you?
It was fantastic. It's just like conversation, back and forth. Seems like I've known you forever.
I know. And then like 30 minutes went by and it feels like only 5 minutes. Okay, so carrying on from prior to the break. So, you know, at Coldwell Banker, you took it to new heights. You were there about 13 years. And then the next mountain was you joined Island Holdings to become the president of, well, now president, because again, you didn't come in that way, right? There's a pattern here, right? So how did that happen? Did Colbert approach you? What was the talk story?
Thank you very much for that. Yes, it was sort of a talk story. You know, Colbert and I have been in passing, been in contact for many, many years. You know, been Hawaii's business community is a very monogamous, small community. Mm-hmm. So you see each other many different times. And so I remember having a conversation with Colbert and saying, you know, he asked me, what is my next destination?
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was doing private equity consulting work and other things after I left Coldwell Banker. And he said, well, you know, maybe you should join us.
And you know, he's sly like that. I like him so much. I'm secretly the fan of his, the president of his fan club. But he's just kind of, what you going to do now? Just kind of like that, right?
Right.
Very, because, you know, Zen monastery time.
You know, it's funny. He even actually said, why would you want to work so hard in working with these startups and the private equity firm? And like this position is a lot less, right? But no, so we basically had gotten together for a few times for lunch and breakfast, and we were just talking story. And he said, you know, we have a succession plan coming up at Island Holdings and mm-hmm. in the insurance area, and would you be interested? And so that's what happened. We had further conversations, and it was very intriguing to me. And more importantly, again, with my competitive nature, it was another challenge.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand. You know, and there's nothing wrong with people who spend, it's their choice, who spend, you know, 10, 20, 30 years at an organization. But you and I share the same disease. We like pain. We like to learn. We like to conquer.
Yes. Yes. You know, and I must say that being the president at Atlas Insurance, you know, this is my fourth company that I'm the president for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all vastly different.
That's not common. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very uncommon, right? I mean, I was a president of a real estate firm, a president of a remediation company, a president of a holdings company, and now of an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
Four distinct different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down fundamentally, I believe, to really all about people.
Yes.
It's how you put individuals in the right place,
yes,
to succeed.
Right. The right people in the right seats and then get out of their way.
Correct.
Come in when you need them. Well, set the vision,
the strategy.
Guide the roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
Left guardrail, right guardrail, and then get out of their way.
Absolutely. Put the right people in the right seats and then really help mentor them and really guide them and support them and give them the tools necessary for them to succeed.
Right, right. You know what? One thing that I, obviously, I'm a woman professional, so I'm biased. I was incredibly impressed when I went on your website to notice that about 80% of your executive team are women. So how did that happen? Was that conscious or meritocracy?
That's a good question. Really, the right candidates were promoted. And that's how I look at it. I don't look at it from a gender perspective. Mm-hmm. That was the same way at my previous companies that I ran. It's really who's the best individual for that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't look at it as male, female scenario. I must say, though, that individuals that we have currently are really talented. Our team, our leadership team are extremely driven. They're very talented. And it shows. It shows in the growth of our organization at Atlas Insurance. It shows how we not only are the largest, Hawaii's largest insurance agency, but how we continuously have grown double digits year over year since I became president.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tribute to them
mm-hmm.
and their dedication.
You know, no one's perfect, right? So I'm not perfect. Certainly you're not perfect. None of us are. But I wonder if your executive team and your, you know, and down below, they're able to shine because they know that they can and they should, right? So gone are the days diminishing are the days where it's a monarchy or it's the, you know, it's the show of that one person, right? And I wonder if the leaders of, you know, current and going forward centuries, it's this ability to come in, create trust, create the vision, left guardrail, right guardrail, guide the roadmap, and then get out of the way. You know, yes. Take the hits, give the credit, and allowing others really to shine. And I wonder if that's what's going on. And I'm not saying you're perfect, because no one is, right? Colbert's not perfect, you're not perfect, I'm not perfect. But there's something about the Island Holdings Group executive leadership team. Do you know what I mean? You, Rob, Colbert, there's something there, like this quiet confidence, Zen style, like Colbert.
Well, you know, what I think it is our sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The sense of purpose at Island Holdings, and now called the Tradewind Group, which just changed our name recently.
Oh, that's right. Pardon me. Yes.
Is really, we're part of a bigger picture. And that is the community of Hawaii. Our purpose here is to be a local company, to help local companies, and to support Hawaii as a community beyond just financial, to be participative, to be actively involved in many different areas, nonprofits, government, all the different areas to help shape Hawaii's communities for the future.
Right. And that was rooted in, you know, Mr. Frank Tokioka's values, right? And I'm thinking about, just to use you, Rob, and Colbert. Colbert's from Lanai. Mm-hmm. Rob's from Kauai, I think, right?
Maui.
Oh, Maui. Oh, pardon me. Sorry, Maui. Maui. Okay. And you're from the Windward side, so Oahu. But there's something about born and raised local style leaders. Because we're kind of beholden to this community. Right. And whether we like it or not, there is a strong factor of like, no, bring shame to your family.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And also there's a factor of really put your money where your mouth is.
Yes.
You know, prove it. Just don't talk about it. Do it.
Right.
And that's the reason why I know you just mentioned that. Oh, I noticed that you're chair of HCDA, Hawaii Community Development Association. Right.
Right. Right. And you just got extended.
I guess I got extended for another 4 years. Yes. Thank you. And so, it's really putting in the time and effort beyond.
That you don't need to.
Yes.
Look at all the stuff that Colbert does.
It's a non-paying position, right? There's a lot of controversy. But I do it because I want to see Hawaii become a better community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about some priorities that Atlas has set forth, because they're really, really neat. So tell me about you folks's, not just words, but actions towards empowering small businesses.
Sure. So just taking a quick step back, one of the things that we did at Atlas was not only the reorganization and putting in the right individuals in the right seat, but is really to build a strategic long-term plan. We really put a lot of time and effort in building that long-term strategic plan. And so everything kind of falls toward it. But one, the three initiatives that really have resonated recently is, one, during COVID, the small businesses of Hawaii, and the small businesses are the lifeline of Hawaii.
And many of them are family businesses.
And many
right.
of them are family businesses, really struggled during that time.
I mean, Servco is still a family business, right?
Correct.
Every business starts somewhere.
Correct. And even Island Holdings or Tradewind Group now. But the small businesses especially struggled during COVID because they were like caught with like deer in the headlights, right? They didn't know where to go, how to operate, what do they do, what are the protocols that they need to play
in place. And they may not be a big enough customer to their vendors to get the attention.
Correct. Correct. So they never got the attention. They never got the advice. They were stuck, right? What do I do? I have someone out on workers' comp now, but I want to close down because of COVID. How do I handle that?
Mm.
How do I handle all of these scenarios and situations? And so the vision for us was, let's put together a dedicated small business department at Atlas Insurance to help small businesses of Hawaii. But not just to help just to sell insurance, because anyone can sell. Again, it's not the money. It was really to support it. So we put together a 24/7 online portal now for all of our clients where they can get safety training. They can get LMS training through like cyber insurance. So let's say they have a small business with 5 employees and they want all their 5 employees to go through cyber training. They can do all that. It's all free for them.
Oh, wow.
There's an HR hotline now.
Right.
Free for them where they can pick up the phone and they can call and say, I have this question regarding HR. This is the kind of value that we wanted to bring. There's a lot of investment on our part, a lot of commitment on our part, but it was something that Atlas, we felt it was very important for the small business community.
Wow, that's really, really neat. And I'm just thinking about my clients, right? So obviously this is for customers of Atlas Insurance, right? Yeah. But it's the value add of that service. And frankly, you didn't have to, you're putting resources, this is legit resources you're putting into this.
Yes,
right?
And they're very costly legit resources that most organizations can't do because it just doesn't pencil out.
Right.
And frankly, it's not penciling out from
right.
a financial perspective, but it's something that we feel it's needed for the
community. It's the right thing to do.
It's
the right thing to do. Okay. The second thing that I thought was super, super neat was how you're connecting with the next generation, the more younger professionals within your team. So
yes.
Tell me about that.
So at Atlas, we have our own, what we consider our own group called EPIC.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Encouraging Professionals and Inspiring Collaboration. And what it is...
That's really neat. You know, usually acronyms are not that neat. But like, it's EPIC. And
right.
then what it stands for is EPIC. So kudos to that.
Yes. And actually what it was we had a large group of millennials and Gen Zs that joined the firm.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from the Schuyler Business School,
mm-hmm.
either through the Best Club or all these different clubs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their FMA and all these others.
Right.
And they're saying, we really enjoy that type of scenario, situation.
They're used to organizing. They're used to professional development and that value-added kind of camaraderie.
Correct.
Yeah.
So they came
so
to
us. So they demanded it from you.
They
nicely,
did.
Nicely.
Nicely. And they, so they came to us and said, we want to put together our own group.
Neat.
Our own club. Kind
Neat.
Of thing. And I said, well, what a great opportunity to teach them board governance.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes.
So we did that. I said, we'll give you a budget.
So you're having them run it themselves, like bylaws, budget, everything.
Budget. And so they have to put together a vision statement, a mission statement. And they put together their whole annual calendar and planning.
Mm.
So the networking events they want to do, networking with other professionals, professional lawyers, professional CPAs. But one caveat I said was, we will support you, but one has to be a participative community service program.
Not just giving money away from the foundation, but
not
you need to get your hands dirty.
Correct.
I love that. You know what's really neat is... not only is this obviously a recruitment and retention tool, let's call it what it is, right? It's really, really neat. However, you're also training the next generation of community servants.
Correct.
Right? That's really neat. And governance, which I will happily admit, when I was younger, I was like, that sounds really stupid. That sounds really boring and stupid. And like, why do I need to know that? And of course, over time of serving, I now realize it is the foundation of service. And when you have great governance, then it allows the organization and the project to do its job. Because the foundation is sound and transparent, and it's an afterthought. It's just there, right?
Yes, and they've done incredible work. I mean, they've done reach outs to, you know, cleaning up beaches, to reading to children, to all these different other community events, but also networking and doing fun things like, you know, they visit some of our clients at these microbreweries, and they have these microbrewery tours. Or
mm-hmm. you know, that sounds a little self-serving.
Yeah.
Good job, Epic. Okay, so tell me about the next one, which is this is also where you have put a lot of resources into this. And so you told me about the fact that currently you have 10 certified risk and claims consultants. So help me understand what that means in the insurance space.
So in the insurance space, really what drives the cost of premiums is claims.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, what we wanted to do was to separate ourselves and be proactive for our clients in helping them reduce their risk by providing in-person safety training, risk assessment, to help them avoid costly lawsuits, claims, and ultimately higher premiums. By doing that, what we do is we actually go out and we do site visitations. We do pre-hiosh inspections. If they have a need to, let's say they had a vehicle accident, and so they are a transportation company, we talk to them about installing cameras, safety cameras in their vehicles. We talk about all these other protocols to help position them. As we go for their renewals of their insurance program to the underwriters, we're able to present these cases to them and say, hey, look, this is a great risk. This is why their premiums should be at a lower level than you're actually quoting.
I just love this so much because, frankly, you don't have to do it.
No.
You could just provide excellent coverage, mm-hmm. excellent service, and when there is an accident of any kind that a client is covered for, then you provide coverage, you fix it, and then their premiums go up.
Correct.
Right?
Typically, how agencies work in Hawaii is they depend on the carriers,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the carriers provide some risk services and they provide claim services, but they're solving or resolving the claim based on their parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Our claims advocacy team is different too. So our claims, which is part of the risk, our claims advocacy team will go out there and let's say there was a claim that was denied from a roof, let's say there was a roof leak and the insurance carrier denied that claim. Our claims advocacy team will go out there, take a look at it, inspect it, and we've reversed many, many, many claims for our clients.
Wow.
To help them through the process.
Wow, that's so great. I mean, it's to put it simply, I'm thinking about like a pediatrician, right? So it's really preventive, but also following an entity as they grow and as they mature, right? Because the needs and wants grow and diversify as an enterprise matures, right?
Correct.
This is so neat. So are you planning to grow this division or are you at about the stable level with 10?
No, we continue to grow and I gotta say this is, and that's why we saw this providing so much value to our middle market, large market clients. That's why we launched that small business online portal,
mm-hmm.
which is more of an online similar type of a proactive approach, but it gives them that opportunity to get that same kind of
services.
But it makes
sense to them. If an HR hotline is available 24 hours and they need to call you at 2 a.m. because a lot of entrepreneurs are working at 2 a.m.,
yes.
then somebody can pick up the phone. It's not an email, but it's a live person.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Right. So neat.
And so we continue. And you know, again, it's not something that easily can be provided. We are the largest and, you know, we do over $350 million in premium a year here in Hawaii alone.
Mm-hmm.
We're larger than even the national brands. And by being the
You're
largest...
larger than some of the national brands.
Oh, we wow. write more premium in Hawaii than the national brands.
Wow, okay.
And the reason why we're able to provide this is because we are of the size we are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it does add value for our very prestigious accounts here in Hawaii.
If nothing else, I want to tell you that you have made insurance sound really, really exciting and interesting. No joke. Look at me. I'm like all jazzed up about insurance. Oh my God, Chase and Ishii. Time seems to fly by when you and I talk, and we could talk for much, much longer. But here we are at the end. It's gone by super fast. So I have one last question for you, my season two question. So if you could be reincarnated and return as any animal, what would you be and why?
You know, my first instinct would be a lion, right? And the reason I say this is because being someone who, not just because you'd be on the top of the mountain, but someone that is put into a position that can make a difference to the employees, to the clients, and to the community, I select the lion.
Thank you so much for your time and your talk story and your sincerity and your grit. And I thank you for all that you're doing at Atlas, within the TradeWind Group, and in the community as well.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Surfco Pacific. If you're a new listener, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit us at hawaiibusiness.com. If you like this episode, leave us a rating or review. Again, I'm your host, Anyang Nakata. Mahalo for joining us today, and see you next time.